it's an old profession. It's an honorable profession, I think, you know, to care for the natural resources that we have. Like I said, I just can't imagine doing anything else.
This is episode 40 of Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, and today I'm talking forestry with Mike Harrell, the VP of Stuckey Timberland. Forestry is an age-old business that should be attractive to people who have a knack for business and who like to be surrounded by nature, maybe get a little dirty, be out in the woods, and maybe even get to use some of that giant machinery, or at least be around it. Today, I hope you'll learn a little about the profession, how to get started in it, and maybe even just a little bit about, you'll hear Mike talk a little bit about the concerns that some people might have about the business itself. It's very informative, and I really, really hope that you'll share this show today with a young person who might be looking for a direction in life, and maybe forestry is just that.
They're not here for us. We're here for them. That's what it's about. Kids.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is all about assisting classroom teachers and school administrators to overcome the many walls or barriers that kids face. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is focused on helping you help kids achieve their dreams. We provide resources and ideas to assist you in working with the kids. This show is published and produced weekly and is interview-based, but sometimes the shows are simply me looking at a topic in depth and detail. If there is a topic you would like me to look into for a future podcast, please let me know at smoletto.hg@gmail.com. As a note, I hope that you will stop by Stitcher or iTunes and leave me a star rating and a comment. That helps the show get noticed by more people. Thanks for listening and joining me week after week. I hope that you will share us with colleagues, friends, and family. And most of all, I'm wishing you the very best and enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 podcast, bringing you ideas and resources for K-12 classrooms, schools, and school districts. Hosted by Steve Mileto. And now, here's Steve with this week's show.
Hey, this is Steve, and I'm back again with Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12. And with me today is Mike Harrell. Say hi, Mike.
Good afternoon.
Glad to have you here, Mike, and today we're going to talk a little bit about forestry, which is the business that Mike is in. And so, Mike, tell us a little bit about what you do and who you are.
My name is Mike Harrell. I work for a small private forest products company, Stuckey Timberland, located in Eastman, Georgia. I'm the vice president of the company, and my duties are day-to-day forestry operations, inventory work, manufacturing or publishing the budget, making sure we stay on line with that, and pretty much anything that comes up, I can, will, or have handled.
Nice. That's a, you gotta like that. And so that's kind of like that whole thing about, and anything else that comes up falls under my job description, right?
Exactly. or other duties as needed in my job description.
There you go. I like that. So let's tell us a little bit about what prompted you to get into forestry.
I grew up in, I'm from Wayne County, grew up in Jessup, Georgia, and that is the timber basket of the South. Lots of my compatriots or friends coming up through school with their fathers either worked at the mill, the big Rayonier mill in Jessup, or in the woods, or it was just kind of natural. My great-grandfather had a small sawmill prior to him becoming the sheriff of Wayne County. Also was involved in the naval stores industry. I mean, it just seemed like a natural thing for me to follow.
Nice. Let me go with something that you just said. So your great-grandfather had a sawmill. And so the difference kind of between the past of a sawmill and today, is there much?
Tremendous. And let me clarify, it was not a big sawmill you would see on the side of the road. It
okay.
was a smaller sawmill that would come. Typically, he would cut a lot of trees that were tapped out from the naval stores industry.
Gotcha.
But Yeah, there's a sawmill today is more of a high-tech operation. You have laser scanners pulling the logs in, scanning the log before it even goes through, and it tells you what can be cut optimally out of the log. The log is cut in probably a second or two. Wow. They all just fall out of the end. Nothing is wasted. So it's a lot higher recovery per log than it used to be, and certainly a lot faster.
And so when you say that recovery of a log, do you mean what does that mean to like me? I don't.
In times gone by, one of the higher paid positions in a sawmill would have been the sawyer there, the lead cutter. And he would come up and look at a log and say, okay, I know that I can get 2 2x12s out of this and maybe 1 2x8. And it really depended on his eye.
Gotcha.
And you had a larger saw blade than what you do now. And the kerf, which is actually the width that the saw cuts through the log, was a lot larger with a circular saw. They moved to band saws, which are very high speed, fast now. And then, like I said, the laser scans it. You automatically get a readout of the end of the log of what's going to be cut out of it. The log goes through, and it can be cut on a bias. It doesn't have to go through straight.
Wow.
And the log, the boards fall out, and it's done.
So huge difference between the days probably of your great-grandfather's sawmill, where he's putting them in to use for building supplies or something like this, and then siding them and taking the tree and, you know,
sure,
whoever's helping him. So you have more technology involved in it.
Sure, a lot more technology. The slabs that came off the old sawmill, I mean, they were either burned or sold for very little. Now, anything that comes off is chipped, ground, sent to a paper mill, burned for recovery for power. Nothing's wasted.
Awesome. So we're going to get back into some more of that information in just a second. Before we go any further, I mean, you're in forestry. This is cool. We're in Eastman. We're surrounded by trees here, pretty much. And just tell me a little bit about, you know, what educational preparation did you have as you started going to pursue this? Because, like you said, there's a little bit of family history there, and so it just kind of seemed natural for you to pursue.
Of course, graduated from high school. Ultimately, what you would need to do is would get a degree in forestry. There are several institutions in the Southeast, one in Tifton, which is at ABAC, University of Georgia, Auburn, Clemson. You go to college. It's a very scientific field, strong in math and not necessarily physics or you know, engineering type things, but more a quantitative analysis type courses that help you make decisions based on financial numbers. Of course, I graduated from University of Georgia, and it's a, of course, you go for 2 years, and then it's your 2-year forestry program there and a 4-year degree. You can go on to get a master's or a doctorate. I, however, just have my general 4-year degree in forest business. They don't have that anymore. It's either a general forestry degree or a general wildlife degree. Back when I graduated, they had some kind of specialty niches.
Gotcha.
And I took a little bit accounting. There were some business law classes that went along with it, but mostly.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Just mostly, it's a lot of technical math, decision-making courses, and along with the natural resources part, you know, what tree is this? I still ride down the road and look at a tree and can remember the scientific name, the genus and species. That was
nice.
Drilled into our head pretty well.
Now, before we were recording, you were telling me something. So you like, when you drive down the road and you're looking, you're remembering the names of the trees, does that go well with the family?
No, my wife actually detests riding down the road with me because I'm constantly looking out of the window going, that's a great stand of pine trees. That management is great. Or this is, you know, I wonder why they did that. But it's constantly going, man, that's, you know, look at those trees. Look at this. And I can't imagine doing anything else. I can't.
That's awesome.
I don't really know if I'm suited to do anything else. I've been in my whole career, I've been in forestry, and I truly enjoy it. I, you know, There's days I'm in the office. There's days I'm outside. Today happens to be a day that I'm in the office because of the rain. But it's a great profession. It's an old profession. It's an honorable profession, I think. You know, to care for the natural resources that we have. Like I said, I just can't imagine doing anything else.
That's awesome. Tell me a little bit about what fascinates you with it. Tell me what it is that just gets you. I mean, what is it that, you know, one of the aspects of it that makes you, you know, excited to come to work every day?
It's hard to say I'm watching a tree grow. But I've been around, you know, long enough, not as long as some of my other, some of the other people who are in the industry. They have a lot more years than I do. But I've seen stands that we've planted. I've seen stands that we have thinned. I've seen stands that we have harvested. And I guess I'm driving down the road, checking on trees, looking, checking for bugs. And then I'll give you an example. Today, a stand we thinned maybe 5 years ago, I really looked at it today and went, you know, I remember when we thinned that, and I thought it would never come a day that they would be as big as they are. Nice. And I looked at it today, and I was like, you know, it's a good-looking stand of wood. We have thinned it. It's put on diameter. We're getting ready to harvest it and start over. So it's basically a series of snapshots maybe that I see that I can relate to watching them. And I do get joy from that.
Nice.
Planting, thinning, harvesting, even though I may not be in that particular stand every day, I see it at least once a year.
That's cool. So tell me, do you get to spend a lot of time outside? Or
I'll give you the forester's adage. When it's hot outside, I'm in the office. when it's nice outside, I'm outside. And but no, there are times when, you know, you have to be outside.
Right.
Inclement weather, you have to. A couple of days ago when it was in the 20s, I stepped out of my truck at daylight to check on a logger. They were already going, and it was fairly cold, but the faster you move, the more you warm up. So that's one of the things. I mean, you're going to have to be out in some nasty weather sometimes, but you're also going to be out in some great weather and enjoy what you do. And especially the things you see and the people you meet, the people who are involved in the industry.
Very cool. So I mean, one of the neat things is that, you know, I at least it would be to me, is that you're not stuck in a cubicle. You choose when you want to stay in your office to take care of office stuff, because I'm sure there's enough legal stuff you got to deal with, and you even talked about budget and stuff like that.
Yeah, I do, and I, to some extent, I get to choose. However, when it's time to do this, it's time to do that, and when it's time, you know, typically toward the end of the year here, we're reforesting, so we're starting to plant trees. As a matter of fact, we've started on our first track over in Lawrence County. There, hopefully, they'll finish up this week. And today is a finish up some budget odds and ends day for me. It's predominantly turned in. There'll be some tweaking that goes on between now and the end of the year, but I hope that a lot of the grunt work has been done on that.
Gotcha. And you know, for you guys listening, I mean, you don't know, but I mean, the day that we're recording this, we're on our second day of having just some nasty weather, and so I think Mike was a little disappointed that he couldn't go outside when I first came in here. And
sure.
And I mean, would you? that's pretty much what I got from you, right? Just like, I'm not making that up.
Yeah, I like to be outside, and I don't know of a forester who does not like to be outside. I also know that people who are typically foresters are typically, well, they don't mind being alone. How about that? I mean, it's
gotcha.
It's predominantly a job that you're going to interact with your logger. You're going to interact with the crews. You're going to interact with other people. But by and large, you spend a lot of time by yourself.
I gotcha. So let's talk a little bit about the land and so forth, because you've said a couple of things. I want to make sure that we kind of the listeners get an image of. We're not talking like an acre of land with 15 trees on it, are we? We're talking about how much land do you supervise with trees on it?
Our company has somewhere around 40,000 acres in Dodge, Lawrence. The bulk of it's in Dodge, Lawrence, and Telfair. We do own property in 18 Georgia counties. I think it's 122 different tracts of property, ranging in size from 50 acres to 4,000 acres, I think, is just a shade over 4,000 is our largest tract. And, you know, typically what we do, we go out, we purchase the pool. Once the trees reach financial maturity, there's always there's a big difference between financial maturity and physical maturity. The trees we cut are financially mature, not physically mature.
Okay.
And without getting into a whole lot of detail and boring some listeners, you know, it's a discounted cash flow back, and when it your time value of money, and when it reads a certain point, we go ahead and cut. And just in a nutshell, we'll plant 605 trees to the acre after we do a good job of site prep, which will be cleaning up, you know, make it burning, spraying to reduce competition, burning, and then machine planting 605 trees to the acre. And then they will grow anywhere from 10 to 15 years before we'll come in and do what we call a first thin. We'll take every fifth row and then the suppressed or diseased trees from the remaining rows. And, you know, that's typically done to reduce, you want your best 150 trees to the acre. So you plant 650 to get to where you need to make sure, you know, each tree is a little different. One may have a fork in it or a crook. So you want to take those out and get good straight trees. And depending on how the track responds, we may let it go to 26, 27, 28 years before we cut it down and start over. And I know some people look at a clear cut and they're like, man, that's terrible, but it's really just a cycle starting over.
And that's something that I wanted to make sure that we said, because I know a lot of times people see, they'll see the workers out there cutting down the trees and so forth, and just like you said, they're like, oh my gosh, look what they're doing to the land, all of a sudden all these songs are coming to mind, but I'll not sing, but the there's a Disney song, listen to the land, listen to, anyway, the okay, at least smile a little. I got a little smile. All right,
sure.
Anyway, but my point is that, can you talk a little bit about, I mean, because like you said, that's part of the process, so can you go a little more detail about that?
There are some people knock a plantation forest. It's a plantation, they're all in rows. I mean, yeah, they are. And that's for ease of harvest.
Makes sense to me.
Number two, there are a lot more trees today because of afforestation or reforestation efforts. And we have to supply, it's a natural resource that is renewable. You know, we're never taking more than we're replanting. Now, I'm speaking from a company standpoint, and also from an industry standpoint. I mean, just because you don't replant a tree, there are other reforestation methods. You might leave seed trees. You might leave shelter wood. You might do this. They're all considered equally valuable. We would not clear cut an acre of property and not plant back. I mean, it makes no sense financially.
Well, it'd put you out of business eventually, wouldn't it?
Correct. You would be surprised at the number of people who say, well, man, ain't y'all gonna cut all the trees down? And a good anecdote for that is 2 years ago or 3 years ago, I can't remember when we started the process on the Sustainable Implementation Committee here. It's the Georgia arm of Sustainable Forestry Initiative, and I'm on that board and the nominal head of Logger Education. We actually constructed a Habitat for Humanity house out of Georgia-grown products. All, you know, the money was raised through the local forestry community.
Awesome.
And we had it, we actually have a video that it was done to promote forestry and forestry in Georgia. And we hired a professional PR committee to come down, and they were from Atlanta. And they came down over a period of a couple of weeks. They would go to a sawmill, they would go to this. And my tour with them was taking them out on some company property and watching a first thinning with the machinery. Of course, everybody loves to see big machinery, and it's always fun to work. I enjoy seeing
it. Oh, that's cool, man.
So they filmed it, and as a sidebar on the way out, these two, they were very nice young gentlemen, asked, they said, you know, aren't you scared that you're going to harvest all the trees? And I said, there's really no way I can answer that for you. I can tell you the statistics. I can tell you this or that. I said, I tell you what I will do, though. I said, if you can spare an extra 30 minutes on this, I'm going to make a phone call and get you up in an airplane from the airport down here. And you can fly any direction you want. And then when you land, tell me if you think we're going to cut down all the trees. Well, they thought it was great. They were going to get to fly, fly an airplane. So as they landed and got back, and they said, you know, we never knew, just driving on the interstate or driving here and there, what the total coverage of forested land in the state of Georgia is. And they said, you know, it is amazing. It's a sea of green. And, you know, there are statistics out there. You can quote those here or there. But we are planning more than what we're harvesting.
I think a big part of that simply would be if people knew the history of just say this county, which the gentleman who it's named after, and sure. And I think Mr. Eastman as well. We have Mr. Dodge and Mr. Eastman. Mm-hmm. They were known for taking the trees away. Well, if that just continued, they'd be gone.
You're right. Well, I will say this. When that happened and the timber exports there in Darien, this was years and years ago, when they would raft the logs down the Altamaha.
Wait a second. You don't raft them anymore?
No.
I'm disappointed, man. I was expecting you to show me a raft and go down the river.
I really wish that there have been, as a child, I did see some recreations of that, but it's a bygone era. They did harvest a lot, and they did harvest more than what was growing back. But now at that time, there was absolutely no reforestation efforts.
Right, and that's actually my point is that if it was not for the efforts of the forestry to say that we really would like to stay in business,
exactly,
it would have been gone a long time ago because of the age when they started doing that. You know, you discover land trees. Well, oh, we'll just go take the trees and we'll do with them. Well, at some point, you know, you end up with the idea that if we're going to keep this business going, then we have to replant. We have to do, you know, the maintaining of them and so forth, which is what you're talking about.
Yeah, and there are a lot of systems out there, certification systems. There's a lot of argument, not to get in too much in the weeds, but, you know, there's FSC, SFI, Tree Farm, which we happen to be a member of here at my office. I mean, in a nutshell, these certification systems basically say, yes, we're doing it, and they're audited third party. Yes, you're operating in a sustainable manner. Yes, you're leaving buffers on the creek. Yes, you're doing this.
So you have people who watch over to kind of say, you know, to look for bad practices, in other words.
Yes. The third party audit comes in and does that. The state agencies, the Georgia Forestry Commission, has water quality foresters. They come and check to make sure we're under a voluntary, what they call voluntary best management practices. And once again, without getting too technical for everyone, you know, it's a set of guidelines that dictate how close we can harvest to a perennial, intermittent, or ephemeral stream. And once again, there's some buffers you leave on them, and
gotcha.
They're voluntary. Let me stress that. Is the way they're portrayed. But if you have a problem, you don't have to follow them, but if you have a problem, you'll pay the piper for it, so to speak. So you're voluntary, but they're mandatory. The state does a great job in coming in and checking those. Matter of fact, before you even have a timber harvest, you can call them if you have any question or concern about water quality issues. Give them a call. They'll come out and say, you know what? What you're doing looks good. Looks great. You're not going to have a problem. You know, what you're doing here, you may need to add 5 more feet to this buffer. You may need to watch this. I mean, it's a tremendous – it's not just going out and cutting trees.
Right.
You're going out and on the ground making a determination. Is this an ephemeral? Is this a intermittent? Is this a perennial? We don't want sediment in this. You know, we need to make sure. And, it, you know, look, it's challenging, but it's very enjoyable.
Let me make sure that before I forget, because I want to make sure I say this. So tell me a little bit about the types of trees that you're working with. What are they?
We are predominantly a pine company. What we plant would be loblolly pine. We do plant a small amount of slash pine on occasion. If we happen to buy a piece of property with an old field on it, we'll plant some slash pine to rake some straw. And we do have a small amount of longleaf pine that we have planted in some areas. But the reason we plant loblolly is because it is the it grows across the board. I mean, on average, it'll give you X amount more volume than a slash or a longleaf. It'll also takes a higher rate of chemical over the top. So if we release work or do some spraying, it'll get rid of the competition. You can spray a little bit higher rate of chemical than you can over the other two.
And let me interrupt you just a second. So competition, what you're talking about, are other plants, vines, underbrush?
Other trees. You know, sweet gum, they have, you know, it makes great hardwood pulpwood paper, and I'm glad something it utilizes a sweet gum, but it's kind of a, well, it's not a bad tree. It's just for every pound of competition underneath our pine stand is a 1 pound less of pine that I can grow. And I don't mean to say that it's a barren understory. And I think a lot of people get the idea of, oh, you're spraying chemicals, it's denuded, it's not. A lot of the chemicals that we use were kind of developed to mimic fire. They'll leave your clovers, your grasses, your broadleaf leguminous forbs. And once again, that may be a little bit too technical.
I was gonna say, what the heck is a leguminous fort?
It's your clover or a partridge pea or stuff that's browse for animal, like cool, a mazapir. Yeah, a mazapir is the generic name of arsenal, which it'll leave all that, just like a fire. And it's almost impossible to get that many perfect burning days to burn everything we need to.
And let me ask you a question about burning, because that's one of the things that is extremely impressive to me when I see controlled burnings going on, especially when you come in the middle of the night and, you know, you see people out there and it's you know, this controlled burning. You know, people see wildfires and they automatically, you see orange out in the middle of the forest going, mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, we got a wildfire going on. But it's not usually, you know, in and around the areas where we are and where you are, it's usually a controlled burning. What's going on when you're doing that? What is the purpose of it?
You're doing it to reduce competition underneath the stand and also to promote the growth of your, you know, browse habitat for your animals.
Nice.
I mean, it's, you know, everything benefits from it. 2 days after a control burn, you got green shoots coming up. Now, if it's done in the winter, you're not going to have it 2 days. But, you know, typically in the spring, you'll do it when the trees start, that your understory stuff start to bloom out, you'll burn there in the spring. And certainly not a raging fire. I mean, you burn into the wind. And it's a great, you know, the buds start coming back, it's green underneath. It's a very lush environment underneath. Matter of fact, as soon as the fire is out or even just passed, you'll see a lot of times what you'll see are turkeys coming behind the fire eating the scorched grasshoppers.
Oh, wow.
The grasshoppers.
They like them cooked, huh?
Yeah. Well, apparently they do, because they're pretty pretty adamant about getting them.
That's so nice. I like that. Tell me a little bit about, because now you got me thinking another direction, but before I do that, I want to, most of the pines that you harvest, mm-hmm. what happens to them? What do they become? What type of products?
Over the years, the sawmill industry is geared up to cut smaller and smaller trees. And I don't mean they're cutting a 2-inch tree. A 28-inch tree now would be about as big as you're going to get cut.
And when you say 28-inch, you mean around?
Well, no, straight through the middle.
Straight through the middle. Gotcha, okay.
Diameter, not the circumference. Typically, the trees we harvest or what we target is a 10-inch to a 18-inch tree in there. You know, gotcha. Not all are going to respond. They're not all going to be 18. Some will be 12, 14. And that's what the sawmills want. So it's a chip and saw type product, which they'll cut whatever's economically feasible out of the bowl of the stem. And then the reason it's called chip and saw, they saw that, and then they chip the slabs and send it to the paper mill or send it to burn, you know, at their power plant for power.
Gotcha.
Most of the clean dust goes to a paper mill. The bark will probably go to their power plant if they have one. It could get sold on the open market. But, yeah, 2x12s. And there are some smaller sawmills that do cut larger trees, but they're few and far between now. I mean, you know, if you got a 40-inch pine tree, you're pretty limited in the places you can take it.
Gotcha. So the different mills have kind of specialized a little bit in the size tree that, I mean.
Yeah, alluding to the earlier, the recovery's better. You know, it's just the tree they want to cut, and it's, you know, we're not cutting a lot of 2x20s or 2x18s anymore. We're cutting 2x4, 2x6, 2x10.
Gotcha. So some of these trees are becoming lumber that someone will buy at, you know, Home Depot or Lowe's,
sure,
or whatever the name of their hardware store.
Yes.
Handy Andy and places like that. And then some of it's going to become paper and pulpwood and,
sure,
and products like that. All right. So let's take a look. Let's talk a little bit. You mentioned a little earlier about spraying for bugs. And so do we have issues with, stuff that we grow. Why can't I think of a great name for that? That has issues with certain types of bugs, like, you know, cotton at one time had issues with the boll weevil and all that.
Typically when we spray, a lot of it's some misconception. What we spray is a herbicide, not necessarily a pesticide. There are pests that can get in. You have Paley's weevils or tip moths or southern pine beetles.
But you're not really spraying for them, is what?
Well, I guess if a widespread tip moth infection was so severe, yes, we would spray. But typically the tree recovers the next year.
Gotcha.
With southern pine beetles, we looked at a stand this morning that had, while we were out doing some checking, it had a few beetle trees in it. And typically what happens is, you know, they'll get in there and then, you know, they multiply. They girdle the tree underneath the bark in the cambium, multiply, then spread to the next tree. But if you have a stand that is not stressed or there's no drought and there are not too many stems to the acre, that tree should be able to fight that off.
Gotcha.
I mean, you're not going to fight off 100% of them. And you are going to have some problems if you have a dry year or a prolonged drought. But by and large, if you keep an eye on the stand and make sure that they're adequately spaced for nutrients and soil and water, and they also it's not too dry. If you just keep an eye on the ones that are infected, you can drop them in. Pine beetles are notorious poor flyers. They really can't fly very far. So if you open a buffer around them, if you do have some,
so they can't go anywhere. They'll stick to that tree.
They basically would, you know, hop out and maybe fly, but they're very poor flyers and they can't fly far. So.
Gotcha. Let me get into a couple of things. What are some of the dangers involved in what you're doing and what you're dealing with? For actually when you're out there on the property dealing with the trees and stuff like this, I mean.
Well, if you're checking on some harvest operations, you surely want to keep your head on a swivel. You don't want to get run over by a skidder. You do not want to.
That would be bad. Yes.
Yes. And by and large, you know, we're safe industry. There's a lot of personal protective equipment. There's a lot of automation nowadays. Very seldom do I see. I can't tell you the last time I saw somebody with a chainsaw.
I was just going to get ready to say, you don't really have lumberjacks that are working for you.
No. This is all automated equipment with big, high flotation tires to reduce ground pressure.
Wow.
You know, you don't want to get too close to the loader. You don't want to get too close to the cut-down machine.
Get planted by the seedling thing.
You're right. You want to keep your hand out of moving machinery parts.
Well, what about creatures? Do you ever run into snakes, rattlesnakes, and timber rattlers or anything like that?
Yeah, and by and large, they're going to leave you alone, just like you want to leave them alone.
Right, stay far clear, right?
Well, I will hazard a guess that the snakes that I've seen, of course, they scare you to death when you step right beside them, but I've probably only seen 10% of the snakes that I've walked across or stepped on, you know.
Which could be a little bothersome, by the way, when you think.
You're right. If, you know, the heat, the spiders, the ticks.
Nice.
It just doesn't, I don't, you know, it's something you need to be aware of.
Right,
and you
right.
surely don't want to go poke a rattlesnake and play with him. But, you know, by and large, they're going to leave you alone, and I leave them alone. So.
Nice. One time I heard you talking about trees, and you talked about something called a cat face.
Sure.
What's a cat face when talking about trees?
You still see those, and those would be from the old naval stores industry. What they would do is they would cut notches that were V-shaped into a tree, and the rosin would run out into a cup. And that's what they did is they would continuously go up the tree, striking new Vs to let the rosin sap run down. And you still see those from time to time. Usually when they got to four sides, they were called, they were tapped out, and they would cut them down. And, you know, a lot of the burning was done historically, but a lot of the burning was done for the naval stores industry to keep the woods open and clean so that when the people would go collect the cups, you know, they wouldn't have to fight through the briars and the ticks and all that. Plus, too, you know, they did run a lot of cattle up underneath the trees. Not all, but, I mean, that's it all factored into the way things used to look. That industry has since faded. I mean, you pretty much get the chemicals at the mill, you know, when they when they render the wood product for pulpwood. I mean, they do get some volatile rosins off of it, and that's another part of the industry. They sell that. I mean, it's just,
I was just getting ready to ask you if that's still part of the industry, if those are all synthetic now or not.
Yes, it's a very strong part. If you look at a lot of the things that are sold now, I mean, people typically think lumber and paper, but it's specialty plastics, you know, food grade pulp. I mean, there's a lot of things that you wouldn't realize wood is a factor for.
Okay, you said something now I gotta ask. Food grade pulps? What did
Some, and I'm certainly not a dietitian.
Are we talking about eating wood?
Yeah, like diet food. That's a food grade special. It's a filler.
I can imagine.
I mean, it, you know, it's a calorie reduction. I'm not saying all. I'm saying you know, some. You're not eating a bar of sawdust, but I mean,
I've watched
some,
too many Disney cartoons. I'm envisioning, you know, chewing on a piece of 2x4 or something.
No. It would just it's a bulk filler. You've got some of the specialty chemicals that come off in the pulping process are used to make. The acetates are used to make computer screens, football helmets, lipstick, toothpaste. And I remember for a long time, of course, my family would only buy Powerade and still do because at one time on the label it said gum ester of wood rosin. Well, son, we're in the wood business and we support the wood business.
I like that. That's nice. Let me kind of shift gears just a little bit and just say, if someone were, you know, if you were talking to a young person who's thinking about, you know, they like the outdoors and they like mess around trees and, you know, might be thinking about that. Now, I hope you don't take offense to how I just said that. That's kind of sounded stupid.
Sure.
But I mean, it's not messing around trees, but I mean, the idea that it kind of might entice them a little bit. What would you, what advice would you give to them if they're thinking about a career in forestry? Even just having an idea about it.
Let me say this. I do a lot of career days at our local high school, and typically the first question I ask is, how many of you think that forest products or forestry is riding around and hunting and fishing all day? Well, 80% of the hands go up. Yes, that does happen from time to time. When the stars line up and everything's going good, you may have a little time to do some entertaining with some of your folks. But you know, if you want to get in it, it's hard work. It's very rewarding work. I take great pride in knowing that the lands that we manage here will be managed and will be here for my children, will be here for other children, not necessarily mine.
Right.
You know, good grades, it's hard. It's a hard job. It's hot in the summer. It's cold in the winter. You're wet. But it's a very rewarding job, and to stick through and to do it and to have a career is something that they can be proud of. And, you know, nothing on this world is worth anything to you if you don't have to work for it. So, you know, your schoolwork is always important. Your grades are always important, especially to get into forestry school.
Right.
You don't have to be a Rhodes Scholar or a Fulbright scholar, and I say that because I certainly was not. I guess I was your typical average student. I mean, I was not the smartest, and I was not the least by any means. I was pretty average, and I just enjoyed it, and I wanted to see things grow, and I worked hard. I mean, that's really the key. Your grades will open the door for you, but hard work is what's going to make you advance.
Awesome. They appreciate that. As a note, when we're talking about, and we're kind of coming to a close here in just a second, sure. We've got, you talked about the different, you went to the University of Georgia, and you talked about how they had a forestry business kind of program then, and I heard you mention a lot of math involved in it. And one of the things that's come out, as you've talked, is that it is a, it's a business that's, mm-hmm. it's going on. The it's not just like, Johnny Appleseed throwing seeds in the ground or something like this. And you want to maintain that business. And so somebody getting into forestry, one of the things that they have to think about is that it does involve budgeting. Some sort of management of staff and teams of people, mm-hmm. as well as working with like contractors, subcontractors, and so forth.
I think what helped me growing up was when I was my very first job out of school, college, I was ready to take on the world, and it was going to be, I guess, much like many people coming out of school. And I had a job in the upstate of South Carolina with a company, Piedmont Pulp, Jim Curry, very nice guy. I learned a lot with him, and I was very fortunate to have him as my first boss. I still nice. Think a lot of Jim. He told me, quite simply, either you can buy wood or you can't. If you can buy wood, I'll employ you. And it's up to you how you run and do. But you understand, don't go in there and make these people mad. And dealing with contractors, I learned early on, most of the people in the forestry industry are getting a little older. There's a good bit of young people coming in and a tremendous amount of people who have been, their careers will be over in 5 to 10 years. It's just that age gap that we have. And what I learned early on dealing with contractors is, especially me as a very young, not so experienced person, you don't tell them you're going to do this because this guy's got 30 years of experience. Hey, this is what I think. Tell me where I'm wrong. Let's look at it together. You're going to get more, because what I learned in my first 8 years in the business, I wouldn't trade for anything.
Gotcha.
Dealing with the people who had seen it from hand loading bolts of pulp wood into the car and loading them on a truck at night to being fully automated. I mean, these guys had seen it all. And, you're not going to tell them anything. You need to ask, and you need to be polite, and you need to work through it, because they're not going to just come out and be forthcoming. They want to see how you act.
Right.
And like I always told the people I work with, sometimes we're going to have a disagreement. That doesn't mean we can't work professionally. Do not take it personally. We can work through it. It's not the end of things if we have a disagreement over something. Work through it. That's the whole beauty of everything. Most people just want to be talked to, not talked down to, but ask about their opinions. And if that's the thing I could give anybody who wants to come out of college is rely on the people who are already there. I mean, they've probably seen this, probably went through the very same thing that you're going, golly, what am I going to do? So, don't talk down.
Excellent talk advice. Love it. So as we're getting ready to close here, one of the things that I want to do first, because I have one last question to ask you, which is nothing to do with forestry, but I ask of all my guests, is there an online presence where either for Stuckey's Timberland or for the forestry or something like this that where I could then link people to
sure.
through the show notes for this?
We have a website, and it's stuckeytimberland.com. There are several good websites. Georgia Forestry Association, they're the advocate for forestry in the state of Georgia. You can also get on Sustainable Forestry Initiative. Just Google those, okay. SFI Inc., Tree Farm. any of the major companies all have, you know, link back probably to SFI. That's a very good resource. Forest Landowners Association.
Nice.
Just put those in a machine. They're resources. UGA, matter of fact, if you're interested in forestry, please contact University of Georgia Upcoming Senior. They want to talk to you. They need students. They need students to fill the jobs that are in the industry now. We were talking earlier, but I will say this. This was the first year some of the people at UGA, we were talking with them about the upcoming graduating class, and I think they had been paid signing bonuses, which I think was the first time I'd ever heard. Now, please don't go overboard and suspect that the signing bonus was $100,000.
Right,
I don't
right.
know what the amount was, but I was told it was a signing bonus to get students, because we do. I mean, it's a natural resource that the growth is projected to become more than it is now. We need professionals to manage that resource. We need professionals to harvest that resource. And a lot of things in forestry are changing. It's not just when I graduated, it was how much can you grow? How much can you cut? This is what we can pay for the land. This is what we can pay if we need to make X. But now it's a little different. The hardwood on the track may be more beneficial to leave for environmental tourism. I mean, that's something that we see. We discuss it here at the office. There's a whole other aspect of forestry now that's on the horizon. You can see. We talk about it at the office. Well, do you want to pay to bird watch? I don't, because I'm out there every day and I see them.
Gotcha.
I enjoy it. I do watch. Right. I bird watch. But I can see the attraction of someone in the city coming down to see the forest. I mean, it's a great thing. It's great to be outside. It's great to see the birds, the turkeys, the deer, armadillos, skunks, if that's your thing. I don't know, but
we'll keep our distance from the skunks.
Sure. But I mean, I do appreciate my job every morning. We're up fairly early. I will say that. Foresters tend to be an early rise crowd. And I do, some of the best times, I think, are early in the morning as I see the sunrise, and I think to myself, you know, what, I hate to use the cliche from Louis Armstrong, what a wonderful world, but look at it as the sun comes up and the trees, the diversity, the things we have. I mean, I'm truly grateful for that.
That's awesome. Well, Mike, what I'd like to ask you in closing is just a question. If you had a teacher in your past, because my audience is teachers and administrators, educators and stuff like this. If you had a teacher or educator of some sort that if you had a chance to get to thank them, that they made a difference in your life, what would you say to them? Who was it? What would you say?
I am not sure. I am quite certain that my teachers were glad that I left. But I would like to extend, please do, if you teachers, please, if you have the student like me, and I you can see it in your mind, I'm sure. Please don't give up on them. And if I could, I would extend a heartfelt thanks to all of my teachers.
Nice.
You know, even though I was at, they worked diligently to keep me on the correct path.
Very nice.
And I appreciate it. And I'm not sure I appreciated it at the time. Matter of fact, I know I didn't. Kind of like I thought my father was not the brightest individual in the world when I was 18. But now that I'm 41, I look back and, you know, those folks were smart and they knew what they were talking about. And if I had only listened a little more, maybe but I do appreciate every one of the teachers I've had. I've taken away something from all of them. And even though they probably do not think, and they were glad to see me go, if I could see them all now, line them up, I would probably apologize to each and every one of them. So
that's awesome, Mike. I appreciate you sharing that. And I got to tell you, that's the most unique response I've had.
Well, I try.
Well, Mike, I can't thank you enough. It's been awesome talking with you today. I greatly appreciate your time, and I look forward to sharing this interview with all our listeners, and I know people will look forward to listening. So thank you.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Take care now.
Hello, listeners. We want to remind everyone to check out all of our digital content at teachinglearningleadingk12.com. That's teachinglearningleadingk12.com. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Just search Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 in the iTunes store. Check back often for updates and new material.
Hang tight, everyone. I'm going to let go of the wall.
You have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, recorded in Eastman, Georgia, at the heart of Georgia Precinct.